remembering the premise from last week that you read along, especially in the Gospels, and you're reading the events in the life of Jesus and some of the teachings. And on occasion, you'll run across one of those sentences or phrases that, for whatever reason, at that moment, it's the right thing at the right time. And it kind of wakes you up. And it really gets your attention. And I was thinking about this afternoon. One of the marks of a truly great, truly powerful teacher is the ability to teach that powerful lesson with the very simplest of statements. Some of the greatest teachers that I've ever had did not have to go through the long discussion, the long explanation. It was that one phrase or that one sentence that still sticks with you after all those years. And some of these of Jesus are exactly like that. One of those is 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9. My grace is sufficient for you. Power is perfected in weakness. I absolutely, in relationship to the Apostle Paul's life, love this passage. I want you to think about it in its context. And when I say that, we immediately want to read verses 7, 8, and 9. That immediate three-verse context where Paul's discussing his thorn in the flesh. And yes, we're going to get to that. But I want you to see that passage in the context of chapters 11 and 12 put together. Because there are some things that are said in chapter 11 that set up this verse as he goes through his thorn in the flesh. Going back to chapter 11, picking up with verse 23. Paul is defending his apostleship. He is trying not to be arrogant, but as the people of Corinth and others are challenging him and challenging him in comparison to the other apostles, he finally breaks down in this chapter and says, all right, let's take their resumes and we're going to put them alongside my resume. And I want you to see what I've done, where I've been, through what I've traveled to get here. But this sets up the next chapter. Look at this. He said, I've been in far more labors than the others. A lot of those guys, Peter does some traveling. James stays in Jerusalem. John does some traveling later on. But for the most part, when you look at the book of Acts, it's Paul that is going from city to city and all over the world to preach the gospel. He said, in those travels, I've been in far more imprisonments than the rest of them. I've constantly been arrested. I've been beaten so many times I cannot even name them. Cannot number them. I cannot keep track of them. I've been in danger of death several times. He said, 5 times. Just from the Jews alone, I have been beaten 39 lashes. Three times I've been beaten with a rod. He said, I was stoned once, and when I was left for dead. Been shipwrecked 3 times. One of those times, he said, I spent a day and a night floating around in the deep. I've had to go on frequent journeys. And in those journeys, I've been in danger from rivers, from robbers, from Jews, from Gentiles. None of them were prejudiced against me. He said everybody took their turn. I was in danger in city or in the wilderness. I was danger at sea, danger even from false brethren, so fellow Christians who just were not what they were supposed to be. I've been in labor and I've been in hardship. I've had sleepless nights. I've been hungry. I've been thirsty. I've gone without food. I've been cold. I've been exposed to the weather. Not to mention the fact that I'm concerned on a daily basis for the church. Now we get to chapter 12. Now we get to verses 7, 8, 9, 10 where Paul says, on top of all of that, there's this matter of the thorn in the flesh that I cannot get rid of. I can't shake it. And I've been to God. I've been to Jesus. He said three times I've got on my knees and I have begged and I have pleaded with Him to take it away. And every time His answer has been, what? I have you. My grace is sufficient. Power is perfected in your weakness. Jesus tells Paul, I'm not going to remove it, but I will carry you while you struggle with it. I will get you where you need to be. I'm the power that you need in this life. Paul, when you are at your weakest point, whether it's the thorn in the flesh, or it's the being beaten, or it's being left at sea, or it's in danger for your life, he said, I was the power. I'm at my strongest when you need me the most. Now watch Paul. I will gladly boast in my weaknesses. If that's what it means, Jesus, if it lets me boast in your power, I'm okay being weak. I'm content. I'm content with the weaknesses, with the insults, with the distresses. See how he's tied chapter 11 to chapter 12? With the persecutions, with the difficulties. I'm good right where I'm at. As long as you're the source. He said, now understand. When I'm weakest, I'm really the strongest because it's in you. And so I love the fact that in the midst of all of this, and Paul has every right to remind us what he's done. He has every right as this faithful child of God to say, you know, I'm kind of tired of this illness, this thorn in the flesh, this physical infirmity, whatever it happens to be. But Jesus also has the right to say, you look over to 1 Peter 5 and verse 7 and Peter's response to it, that if you'll just cast your burdens at my feet, I'll take care of it. Because I care for you. I love you. There are so many times that this life beats on us and takes its swings at us. And the people in this world, and we looked at Satan this morning and the part that he plays in it, where those things take their shots at us. And they're not shy about it. And it's not just one group. Paul said it's Jew and Gentile and it's supposed Christian. It's robbers and good. It's everybody. And there are times that, like Paul, we're tempted to say, God, I've been begging you to take care of this. And I'm getting kind of frustrated with it. And so again, Jesus says, I have you. It's all right. My grace is enough. And it's when we realize that. It's when we realize that what He's providing is what we need. May not always be what we want, but it is what He understands that we need to be successful. It's then that we're empowered. It's then that we will be able to conquer. Second passage comes from Matthew chapter 5 and verse 14. You are the light of the world. Same context, you're the salt of the earth. Jesus looking at the 12, and He's telling them, you know, when I get through with you and I leave, you're staying behind. You're the influence. You're the examples. You're the light. You're the difference makers. You're the salt. And so let me mold you into those things so I can leave you and I can trust you to do the work. Now then, as we've already said, you know, this is about reading these passages anew. It's about seeing them again, and sometimes you catch something that you've missed, even though you've read it 1,000 times, and it grabs your heart. Here's my thought. This is what crossed my mind when I reread this statement. When I am tempted to complain about how dark this world has gotten, maybe I need to stop and take a look at my life, not the lives of those in the world. If I'm the light of the world, and the world is dark, maybe I'm not doing my job. What I mean is this, the smallest light always pushes back the dark, no matter how dark it is. In fact, I'll even make this statement. A match in the darkest dark makes a difference. And the darker it is, the more impact the light has. And so if I look around this world and it's blacker than black and it's darker than dark, I must not be much of a light. I must not be having much of an impact, because you see, darkness cannot overpower the light. The absolute darkest night you've ever known will always give way to the sun the next morning. The light always pushes out the darkness. Jesus entrusted it to the 12, who passed it on to that next generation, and we see it with Paul, we see it with Timothy, and Paul tells Timothy to pass it on to the next generation. And so he's entrusted it to me, to be the light of the world. If I am any measure of light at all, I'll brighten this world. I will make a difference. And so if I'm not pleased with how dark the world is, maybe I should relight my candle, turn on my flashlight, put mine on the lampstand, take it out from underneath the bushel basket, however you want to describe it. Think about that the next time you read that passage. As you individually being the light of the world. John 15, verse 5. John chapter 15 is that passage that is just absolutely breathtaking in the sense that we realize just how dependent we are. Apart from me, you can do nothing. I am the vine and you're the branches. And you're expected to grow and you're expected to produce. And you're going to do so as long as you're attached to me. As long as you have the source. As long as you're rooted and grounded through me. That's what he's telling those disciples. You want to go out into the world and you want to be productive? Do not let yourself be cut off from me. We have been planted to bloom. We have been planted to produce fruit, to do good, to accomplish what He sent us to accomplish in this life. We were created, Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 10, for good works. We have a purpose. But when I try to do it alone, when it's more about me than it is about Him, when I'm separated from my source, I will falter. I will fail. And the image that Jesus uses in John 15 is, I will wither and die. Sometimes I'm convinced that even though we look like we're busy in the church, and we look like we're doing maybe a whole lot of things and maybe even some good things, I'm convinced that sometimes we're not nearly as effective and productive as we could be, because it's become more about being busy and about me than it is about being attached to the vine. True fruit comes through being empowered by the Son of God and producing that fruit that He's producing at the root. And so there's that constant challenge to, if I'm going to be anything, I'm going to have to be it in Him. The only way I can live this life successfully, the only way I'm going to bear good fruit, is through the power of Jesus. And Paul said it this way in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 10, I am what I am by the grace of God. Paul said, you know, look at my credentials, all that I had going for me. He said, I had to throw it away. It was rubbish. If I was going to be anything, it was going to be in Christ Jesus. We live in a world where it is not intentionally, I think, preached at us through sports and stuff, that it's all about me. Because as coaches, we try to make it about a team. But it's still preached at us, because when we turn on the television and we watch any professional sport, it's about my touchdown celebration. It's about my earth-shattering dunk. It's all about put all the glow on me. And that begins to infiltrate our lives and show up in other areas. It shows up in our work. It shows up in our homes. It shows up in the church. And we're in danger of taking the glory that belongs to Jesus and the power that belongs to Him and trying to make it our own. Matthew chapter 23, verse 11. Jesus said, you want to be the greatest? Be the servant. And all of a sudden, in a world where we want to be catered to, where we want to be pampered, where we want to sit on a throne, where we want everybody to serve us, and in a world that they understood that way as well, Jesus has said, let's flip it upside down. He said, you got the wrong idea. He said, it doesn't work that way. And so you come to that kind of verse, and if you read it, you have to say, wow. And here's why. The one who left his throne in heaven, the one who had the right to be served, the one who for eternity has been worshiped by angels, the one who taught, healed, blessed children, washed feet, and died to show me how to do it. That's the speaker. That's the one who is telling me, if you want to make it to the top, put yourself at the bottom. You want to be at the front of the line, put yourself at the back. You want to be first, be last. Make it about someone else. Make it about service. What did I say earlier? Ephesians 2 verse 10, we're created for good works. We're created not to be served, but to serve. And to show us that so that we understand it, God became man. And He didn't become king man. He became carpenter man. He became teacher man. He became poor man. He became servant. Life is found in giving, not taking. Life is found in serving and not being served. And nature teaches us that. If you doubt that in any way, just ask the Dead Sea. If all you do is take from what's around you and you never give back, you will die. The Sea of Galilee is alive and teeming, because the bad passes through it, the good as well, goes down the river, ends up at the lowest point on the face of the earth. The Dead Sea's dead because it has no outlet. It always takes and it never gives. Again, you look at the world when it's, whether directly or indirectly, preached and taught to us that if you're not the highest paid receiver, you have to go on strike till you get the money you want. If you don't have the contract you want, you just sit in the corner and pout and somebody will pay you enough to make you happy. When it's always about, give me the next bit that's mine. And we see that exemplified around us. It's so easy to model our Christian lives after it. God, I'm going to come to church and I'm going to let you serve me. I'm going to come to church and I'm going to let them entertain me. And I'm going to come and I'm going to let them give and give and give and I'm going to take and I'm not ever going to put anything back in. No wonder we live in a world that you cannot satisfy. If it's always about the taking rather than the giving, the being served rather than the serving, there's never enough. There is never enough pampering. You know, we go to the spa, or we go to the masseuse, or we go to be pampered. When is it we leave that situation? When we run out of money. Not when we say, oh, I'm tired of being massaged. I'm tired of being pampered. Let me get up and leave so somebody else can take my place. No. It's when we run out of money. It's when we can't afford to have anymore. When we apply that across the board in our lives, never be satisfied. Let's stop there. I'm not even sure what the next slide is, the next verse. We'll pick it up next week. Here's the thought I want to leave you with, and it's not about one particular one of these verses, but it's about all of them. If we will approach our Bible study as if we've never seen it before, as if every time I read it, I'm sitting at the feet of the Master, and He's teaching me for the first time, and if I approach that Bible study with the understanding that I am listening to the Son of God, and the Son of God does not waste words, and I come across these phrases, they're going to finally register. They're going to sink in. And they're going to change my life. Because I can promise you, if Jesus took the time to say it, and God took the time to record it for me today, it's life changing. If I will let it be. That life changing word became flesh, John chapter 1 and verse 14. And we beheld His glory, the glory of the only begotten of God, of Father, on this earth. So that we could know what God looked like and how He acted and how He dealt with humanity. And then He died to buy our salvation. If you're not a child of God, He's offering you that life tonight. He's offering to be your source. He's offering to be your king. He's offering to be your life. And if you've not taken advantage of that, I beg you, please, please do so tonight as we stand and sing.